Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Possibly we do have the July 4th return of Major League Baseball, shortened season, expanded postseason, as many as possible games would be played in the club's home stadiums. The games would basically all be intra-division except for some interleague, which would just be played with the same geographic division. So the NL East would play the AL East and on with the Centrals and the West. There would also be a universal designated hitter. So I know we're kind of in that spot of just any live sports. They could pretty much give us anything, and we would probably like it. But what do we think about that potential for at least some return to baseball?
Braber, I think it's the last thing you just said, any live sports. And we all understand it's not going to look this year exactly how it's always looked and what it's going to look like down the road. So I think just getting back, and there have been some really good solutions and some really good ideas that have gotten thrown out there. And I think initially we were kind of hoping, maybe around Memorial Day or June 1, and you've always been pretty sound and solid on around the 4th of July being the get up and go date. So I'll just be excited to hear play ball. I can't tell you just from Georgia's standpoint how much I'm missing it. And I go by the field several times every day, and I keep in touch with a lot of the players and the coaches, and it's just heartbreaking for them. I mean, all of our seniors, all the seniors, of course, from all across the university, graduating right now, and trying to decide who's going to come back, and how's all the scholarship money going to get figured out. So, and I'm missing it so much for Georgia, and I know how much of the country is missing baseball, because the great thing about baseball, even if you're not locked in to a game, it's just it's kind of the background noise of summertime in the United States to me. It's, if the Braves are good, not good, whatever, if there's another game on, you're out on the porch grilling out, having a beer, talking to friends or whatever, there's a baseball game on. There's just something comforting in summertime about it to me.
Yeah, it does give you something to follow along with. I mean, I'm sitting there every night of the week watching a nine-inning baseball game, but I would say just about every night of the week at some point during the evening, I am turning over and checking out what the Braves are up to and watching a few innings there and saying, all right, Acuna's coming up, I'm going to watch that at-bat. Albies is coming up, I'm going to watch that at-bat. All right, now Freddie, I'm going to watch that at-bat and keep up with that. You're paying attention to the standings and who's doing what and, gearing up for an exciting postseason, which now in this scenario would be expanded. I guess now they're going to mix in the interleague games, but if they just played intra-division games, that number would basically work out to, it'd be about 20 and a half per the other four. So they play 19 already against their division opponents. So you'd basically be right at about the number that you're playing anyway over the course of 162 game season against your division rivals.
I'm sorry, Chris, did you say, so they're going to play only intra-division and then two interleague series? Because they're playing, 82 games? Is that right?
82 games, and so, yeah.
So you got 4 times 19 is 76, and then they'd play 2 3-game series against from the other league?
That would probably be absolutely what they'd do. And then, so, yeah, you're just keeping your number that they'd be playing anyway against their division rivals and then mixing in at least something different there, so you're not just playing an entire season against your against the same teams over and over. Although at times that's what even the 162 game season feels like. I think I've mentioned already before, I believe we're in the middle of May. I think the Braves and Marlins would have already played like 4 times,
a lot of
maybe
games.
5 already. So,
and but kind of talking about just a tangent here for a second about the Braves, I found myself last year, I bet I watched them more last year than at any point. And I'm talking about a decade combined since their glory days in the 90s. just because that lineup was so good. And for that stretch where the bullpen was so bad, I mean, how many nights? Oh boy, the Braves with Albies and Acuna, they're and Freddie Freeman. Boy, you know they're out to a 7-2 lead, an 8-2 lead. But then you knew it was going to be 8-6 because the bullpen was going to foul things up. And so I think with that, and that's probably why so many Atlanta players had some extra juice in the stats. They weren't giving away ABs. They knew they had to keep scoring. And so I remember watching a game in August, and to me it kind of summarized the year. Braves got up like 6-1, and then it got to be 6-5, and then the Braves went up 8-5, then it was 8-6, and the final score was 9-6. So to me, that now I get it. If you're a diehard Braves fan, I understand how stressful that is. But as far as just the excitement of watching them, I thought last year was tremendous. Until the last first inning of the season.
I think there was a point last year where the Braves from like the last third of the game from inning seven on had like the best offense in baseball. They scored a ton of runs.
You got a bad bullpen, you got to keep scoring. But I mean, how many times, Bramer, and I get it, you play it out. These guys are making a lot of money. You should run everything out. You absolutely should. But you're in game 104 in August, and it's 104 degrees in game 104, and you're down 6-1 in the seventh, and there's a two hopper to short. I get it. You're not on a dead sprint down to first base. For the Braves, their attitude had to be last year. Now, the bullpen did improve as the season went along, but their attitude had to be like, man, we got a scratch and claw for every run we can get, for every base we can get.
No, the Braves made those deadline deals and definitely upgraded the bullpen with Martin. And, Green got off to a rough start. He was an all-star with Detroit last year, and he ended up where the Braves had to move him out of that closer spot and put him in the setup role, and then Melanson kind of ended up the closer. But they've got all three of those guys back. They added Will Smith from the Giants, who had a big year last year. So, I mean, Atlanta's bullpen this season is shaping up to be an asset. And, instead of one that's just a big giant problem. Even, I thought Luke Jackson was way better than he was perceived. Where Jackson struggled was when he was in a role that he just wasn't cut out for. And when they put him in there to try to close out a game, it seemed like that's where a lot of the damage was done. But in any other spot in the bullpen, Jackson was really good for Atlanta. So you throw him in the mix, too. And the Braves bullpen has got a chance to be one of the strongest ones in the league this year.
Now, I think when you look at the depth of it, the number of quality arms, it just when they tried Green as the closer, and then that didn't work, then Jackson, as you said, had to get shuffled around a little bit. I think there was just a trickle down. But if they can have it solid and basically knowing what everybody's role is, I think that'll be a big plus. And when Green came over, Chris, you remember you and I talked about it last summer. It was a deal like, listen, you got to give this guy a chance. He's moving here from a different city. And, I mean, it's what, think about any of us who have changed jobs. I've always done the same thing my whole life. But can you imagine, if you worked in Athens or Atlanta, and then all of a sudden, hey, you got a job in Detroit, and you've got to move there tomorrow and start working. Your life, granted, you're making a ton of money and you're playing ball, but your life's turned upside down. You're thinking about your family. You got to figure out where you're going to live. Am I going to be here for a long time? Is it worth buying a house? So for that first month or so, he struggled. But then once he got settled in, I agree with you. I think he did a really good job. But I think that's definitely it, for the trade deadline deals. It's not an automatic, and I think you do have to understand. Bramers, you like to point out, these guys are human beings, right?
Yes.
And just, imagine if you got a new job, if your company traded you to Detroit or San Diego or Milwaukee, and then all of a sudden you got to start producing, tomorrow. Because usually, when we change jobs, you got your 2 weeks, and, the new company will give you time to get settled. Not here. Plus, you also got a lot of people, and nobody gets booed like relievers. And my buddy Mitchell Boggs told me we were sitting on a flight together when he had come back to finish school after his major league career was over. And I said, Mitchell, you on Twitter? He goes, JD, bad idea for Major League Baseball relievers to be on Twitter.
Yeah, because that's the other thing with Green, is he was being thrust into this role that had been such a headache for the Braves all season, finding a guy who could close games, and
this
then you're there.
And you don't
know anyone in there, and all of a sudden you're in these high leverage pressure situations, and then you're screwing up, and you're probably thinking like, oh my God, all these guys, they don't know who I am, they hate me, they think I'm just a big loser. They're probably wondering like, who the heck traded for this guy? And then, you know, I don't remember who I guess it was probably a couple minor leaguers, but even if it had been somebody that maybe, you know, the current Braves had a relationship with, and they were upset that that guy had been traded to bring you in, and all of a sudden you're blowing saves.
Yeah, it's not a healthy thing, but he finally did get it going. And, you know, that's a thing, too. What stunk, you know, beyond the Braves getting humiliated with that, was it a 10-run first inning? Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. That was such a great series. So much so that you could say games 1, 3, and 4 could have gone the other way. It was almost like the wrong team won those. And then Fultonevich wins this great pitching duel in game 2. And I think we all I remember that was it was a Friday afternoon, and we all kind of felt like, well, once they lost that first game at home, they're done. And then Fultonevich goes out there and throws this, you know, Smoltz and Avery-esque just tremendous outing to even up the series. Then the Braves should have won game 3, and the Cardinals did. And the Cardinals should have won game 4, and the Braves did, to force it back to Atlanta. And you're thinking like, all right, this is just going to be awesome, because it was such an incredible series. And then, well, there was 10 in the first.
Speaking of the wrong team winning, Jeff, as we move on in the 5 at 5, if you could get a hold of an SEC helmet schedule.
Hang on, give me 4 seconds.
All right.
Howell has gone dead on me here. Just a second.
Yeah, what I'm going to ask you to do.
Oh, crap. I just hit NFL. SEC, because I'm watching the Niners try and pull this thing.
Yeah, out. Here come the Cowboys had time.
Oh,
even after
time.
Montana to Clark.
And that would be a horse collar, by the way.
And
too.
Look at that. I mean, that throw was like right in between. There were 3 defenders there. Just threaded it right in there.
Yeah, right there to Drew Pearson. All right, 2020 SEC football helmet schedule. And I think, does Lott get a pick here in a second? Boop.
Yeah, look at that. Who was that? Somebody jumped right in front. That is a 15-yard penalty now.
Yes, just with a big-time horse collar. Yeah, that was, I think, Carlton Williamson who jumped right in front and –
like Danny White is trying to tell the crowd to hush. Like, you're on the road, buddy.
Doesn't work like that anymore.
I mean, the shape of that field it's astonishing how bad it is.
Oh, for sure.
Like, those guys had to play on that.
And then he fumbled. He got stripped. I think, was it Dan Buns who might have caused it?
Yep. And the Niners
are. What a game. The week after that great, great, great battle down in Miami. All right, I have the schedule up.
All right, wrong team winning. That's the subject. Give me the what's the biggest underdog that's going to win a game in the SEC this season? Unfortunately, we know the answer to that last year because it happened
you that
to Georgia.
The day before that didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, well, technically the biggest underdog to win a game in the SEC last season was Georgia State, who was a 24.5-point dog, won 38-30 in Knoxville. But just as a conference game went, it was Georgia laying 20.5 to the Gamecocks. Although Wisconsin did lose as a 30.5-point favorite to Illinois, so that was the biggest upset of last season.
I've got a potential one for you here, Chris. Mississippi State hosting Texas A&M on October 3rd. The hard part about somebody upsetting Bama or LSU, as you pointed out, every team in the West plays them back-to-back.
Right. You'd have to get one of them on the front end, I would think.
Yeah, I would think. I would say South Carolina could win at LSU if it was early, but I would guess by November 14th, LSU is going to have the offense humming. I don't think Missouri is going to be very good. So I'll say Mississippi State potentially clipping A&M, and maybe that's A&M's loss to be 9-1 heading into Bama and LSU.
That game's in Starkville, so what do you figure that number's going to be? I mean, we're not looking at like a 3-touchdown dog winning there, huh?
No, I would say maybe A&M by, 5.5?
Yeah. I mean, that has been the thing. It's like the those heavy underdogs, right, they do not win often in the SEC. That was rare event that happened here in Athens last year.
I got another one for you. That team, South Carolina on October the 3rd, going to Florida a week after the Gators are in Knoxville and a week before the Gators host LSU.
Yeah. Again, Bama has its schedule spread out nicely.
Always.
They host us after Georgia State. They go to Ole Miss after Kent State. They go to Arkansas, which doesn't matter. Arkansas would have no chance to win. They come home and play Mississippi State. Tennessee maybe would be their best chance to maybe get.
What about UT Martin on November 14th? Or is that still too early to call?
Well, you know, that is a sandwich game. It's right between LSU and Texas A&M, and then they've got the Iron Bowl after that. So that UT Martin game in November when you play LSU, Texas A&M, and Auburn is a tricky spot. Well, how about just for a non-conference game where, yeah, like we said, Georgia State did win in Knoxville last year. Is there, excluding Arkansas, of course, let's take them out of it. Is there someone else that could get picked off, like South Carolina hosting Wofford in between LSU and Clemson?
There would be potential there. Wofford's good. Tennessee needs to be careful with Troy in between Athens and Nashville. Let's see. Nobody for the Gators. Good God. Hopefully nobody for the Dogs. For Kentucky, oh man, God knows their schedules are just horrible.
Like Kentucky, though, always like that Eastern Michigan game.
It's gonna be a tight game.
Yeah, for some reason those games always feel close.
They do. Tennessee, no. Although Furman is between Oklahoma and Florida, that one will probably be a little bit tough.
Missouri's going to lose at BYU, but they're probably also going to be an underdog.
They'll be an underdog there for sure. So that would probably be the best crack at it. I don't think Southeast Missouri could beat Ole Miss. But Ole Miss does play Georgia Southern the week before or 5 days before going to Mississippi State, so that might be it.
Texas A&M losing to Arkansas might be one, since they always almost do.
By the way, I appreciate Missouri going to BYU the week before we go there. Thank you.
Yeah, that helps out.
Yeah.
Solid scheduling there.
Because that's hard. I mean, that's going to be the week after Auburn. So, you know, that's going to be tough. That'll certainly help some. By the way, you know, talking about, and I get it, they won it all. LSU's November schedule, whoa. Alabama, South Carolina, at Auburn, at A&M. That's rugged.
It is rugged, and there's no – I mean, that's the one thing that makes it tougher than what South Carolina has to deal with is they don't have quote-unquote cupcake. But the Gamecocks have us, LSU, and Clemson, and two of those are on the road.
That's true.
So they, just like last year, have got a rough finish. And a year ago in November, I believe they played App State and they lost. So.
They did. And they catch us the week after we play Florida. And
they're going to catch us, though, on full alert, though, after what they did here last year. The Kentucky game in Lexington is my most troublesome spot, just for a game that Georgia's, of course, absolutely expected to win. But I don't like the spot where that game is this year. Plus, it could be cold.
If everything goes off as planned right now, and again, no spring practice, you know, pretty much for everybody, and you know, it hurt Georgia a little bit more. You know, new left tackle, new kicker, new quarterback, new OC. What's the Dogs' record right now on May? What's the date today? The 12th, says Chris Brehm.
You mean like overall for the season?
Yeah, what's their record this
year? 11-1. Yeah.
Wow. I'll take that, by the way, as long as we beat Tech.
Would you take a 1-point win over East Tennessee State right now?
Yes.
But I wouldn't. Actually, if we beat East Tennessee State by one, I'll love us at Alabama the next week. Catching. But, you know, that'll just inflate that line, too.
Because remember, the only time I've said no it was before that stupid Nickel State game, and I was sitting there going, like, oh, my God, I've lost this game. Brehm always asked me this, and the one time I say no.
Yeah.
Well, we won by two.
Well, you'll take a 2-point win right now then.
Amen to that.
But that did not bode well for the rest of that that season. Yeah, I guess it's not unfair to say that Georgia's got the potential to be the victim of the biggest upset in the league again, since we watched it happen last year, and I don't like the spot of that Kentucky game.
I'll also say, Chris, South Carolina – has a history of beating us in back-to-back years. Beat us in 58, 59, 78, and 79. They beat us in 99 and 2000. They beat us three in a row. So it's they've got a history of that. So they beat us in, I guess, 88 and 89. Yeah. So we got to be on red alert for that.
We've got a history under Kirby of exacting a lot of good revenge, though, on teams.
I like
except that
vengeance.
One. Yeah.
Could you see that is a South Carolina cat? They catch both us and Florida in good spots.
No, 100% they do. What doesn't make the fact that they beat us here last year and what Georgia has handled those revenge spots under Kirby the last couple of seasons. That's another area where he appears to be a chip off the old block because teams have not been able to beat Saban back to back, except for oddly enough, Ole Miss.
By the way, you know, I'll tell you who's like another reason number 8,000 we need to win in Jacksonville. I mean, Florida's schedule after us. Holy moly.
Hey, that's how it always is.
It is really. With Missouri not being good now, and maybe they will turn out to be really good, but, you know, Missouri got them those back-to-back years, but in Nashville, then Mizzou, then New Mexico State.
The one thing that's normally they've only got one more conference game after us. This year they do have two, but with it being Vandy and Missouri, that's we're going to be their potentially their last SEC loss. So yeah, we need to beat them.
What's Florida's record this year? 9-3.
That's I'd go with that. Yeah.
Do you see them losing to either Tennessee or South Carolina? One of those games.
Yeah, I could definitely see one of those games.
I think they'll beat LSU at home.
The thing about Kentucky is doing some prep and looking at these teams and looking ahead to the season. Like Kentucky's going to have a legitimately strong offensive line. Now they're losing Bowden there, but I think Kentucky has arrived at this point under Mark Stoops. He's been there long enough. They've had patience with them. That they're no longer going to have a season where they're just a doormat.
No, they're going to be solid and sound every year. Now, again, and that's, as you pointed out, that's a tweener spot. Like, we should still win that game, but, you know, it might be something like 28-17.
Right, but I also like they, you know, when they go to Gainesville in week two, like, I know that's not a spot where Florida's just going to maul them
anymore. I don't think so.
Yeah. All right, finally, Jeff, one more little nugget in the 5 at 5 before we close it out. Give me right now most important, biggest of the non-traditional non-conference matchups for this season.
I think the Texas Longhorns, for them going to Baton Rouge.
Yeah, given they've got so much coming back and LSU week two is still going to be in replace mode.
Yeah. I mean, we had a Cuts on yesterday and, you know, started talking some football with him too. And he was brought, and I'm, listen, Tom Herman's done a good job. He's a good coach. They're recruiting well. But when you look at the fast pace that elite coaches in college football have won, that Dabo's a bit of an exception. It took him, you know, a little bit of time, but Clemson had fallen so far down. You know, I think he's in a spot where if they don't have a really good year this year, things could get a little bit toasty. And Cuts had kind of said, like, yeah, if we don't go, anything less than 10-2, 9-3, it's going to get uncomfortable there. And to me, with everything LSU lost, that's a big spot there for Texas.
Well, and if someone else gets, you know, Baylor got to the Big 12 title game last year.
Exactly.
All right. There's.
Would you agree with that, or do you have another?
No, I mean, Clemson Notre Dame is another one, if you want to call that non-traditional non-conference, although technically it's a conference game for Notre Dame, a partial one.
In the conference.
But yeah, I mean, that just strikes me as the only game in the regular season that Clemson even has any shot of losing. So got to go to South Bend. You know, otherwise, you know, there's already, there's a playoff spot for them. And I don't, even if they lose that game, that might even be one that gives them a pass if they end up winning the ACC. That, all right, well, their only loss was at Notre Dame. So I think that's a big one, too.
Oh, I think that's enormous. Now, one thing with Clemson, as great as they've been, We have seen them lose to Pitt, lose to NC State, you know, almost lose to North Carolina. So will there be a game like that this year?
Yeah, we'll see. The Pitt game was at home.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the team that will benefit, though, from if some of these leagues decide that they can only play conference games is going to be Oregon with their first two games against North Dakota State and Ohio State. And so between Justin Fields and Trey Lance, those are like basically throw in Lawrence. Those right now are considered the top three quarterback prospects in next year's draft. Like, you'd have two probable first-round draft picks at quarterback you've got to face in your first 2 weeks, and then suddenly you wouldn't have to.
Yeah, that would be a big boost. And that'd probably be the best shot the Pac-12 would have at getting a team in.
Yeah, which might be why the Pac-12 is like, yeah, you know what, we'll just play conference games. All right, so the 5 at 5 is brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Coming up next.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.